As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
You are now tuned into anything potable, the most honorable, the most audible. Hold the applause, like Paul Pierce when he was fresh out the hospital. Like Antoine when he shimmied after shots went through. So tell me why you mad even. Your team gonna be sad leaving after matching up with Brad Stevens. Each season, champion contenders. We drop twice a week like you trying to guard Kemba. Your team whack and your players whacker. I got the inside scoop after hanging up with Jay and Packer. Okay, we about chips here. I'm talking about this year. Banner 12 plus 6 here. Carson Edwards top rookie. I'm seeing it now. Ain't playing around with Tatum and Hayward or Brown. We off the charts, but you gotta play it Marcus Smart. Close out, cause he pulling up from Harvard Yard. Gang green, it's no other way. So tune in to the pod if you plan on staying up today. You heard? Aziz. Hey Jay, I see you, player. Come on.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Anything Is Potable. You know it's a crazy night because I'm not normally the host. I'm normally just along for the ride with Sam Jam Packard. He's in New York City. Jason Tatum had 60 points, so we're doing an emergency podcast. I dragged in Chris Forsberg, the great, from NBC Sports Boston. He's coming to us from his car somewhere on the way to the Worcester area. Forsberg, what was your takeaway from that crazy fucking 32-point comeback?
The comeback is the crazy part to me. And the other part is, like, I didn't even know Tatum was getting near 60. Like, it just happened so quietly to me.
Yeah, he snuck up on 60.
Right? Like, I'll put it this way. We were in the building when IT went for 52 against Miami and had that crazy 48 points right now. Tatum just did it methodically. You know, what do you have? 14 in the first, didn't have a lot in the third. And then all of a sudden it was just like, yeah, I'm taking this game over in the fourth. And I mean, it's still crazy to watch, but you know, what I love is that everybody else got involved in it too. So, you know, Jaylen Brown hits that corner three. Aaron Nesmith is jumping over people for rebounds. Time Lord's winning jump balls. You know, on nights like this, when guys go for 60, it sometimes feels like they just dominate the game. And Tatum was frigging amazing. But, like, they needed everybody to come back from that 32-point deficit.
Yeah, and to me, I'll start with Tatum 60 because that's the obvious place to start. The motherfucker tied Larry Bird's franchise scoring record for a single game. It just felt like he was hell-bent on getting to the rim. And he was, like, very set on getting to the rim, even when San Antonio made it tough for him. If you look at his shot chart, it was, like, basically either at the rim or a three. And that's how the Celtics want him to play. They want him to get downhill. They want him to play strong. Like, he had some grown man moves. In overtime, he had, like he just kind of bullied some of the Spurs defenders, got to his spots, drew fouls. He really should have had a chance, I think, to surpass Larry Bird's record, because that was an and one, right? Right at the end?
It was. And it was like, I don't know, all of us who grew up watching Larry Bird were kind of like conflicted. I was like, I kind of want him to tie the record. I don't know if I want him to break it, if, as selfish as that sounds.
Yeah, right. Like Larry Bird deserves that one. Just let him have it, man. Like, maybe one day Tatum will deserve it too. But for now, Bird should keep that one. And it was the thing about it too was it just everything about that game kind of snuck up on you, because the Celtics, they were just getting smoked. They were down 20 points almost instantly. Tatum had the first 12, and like, it was almost a full quarter before anyone else on the Celtics scored. They were down, I think, like 37-14 by the time Tristan Thompson finally scored a dunk. It was, and he was like the only one there at the start. Jaylen Brown went 5-24, although the last three was an enormous one. And then kind of the Celtics just went into halftime. They had given up 70%+ shooting and just kind of came out and started to clamp up. And before long, they were within 20, and it was still like, yeah, they're not coming back. And then it was 10, and it was like, yeah, they still probably won't come back. Like, nobody finishes off that big a comeback. And then it was 5, and then it was 0. And then it became like sort of a classic game. Like, DeRozan was making huge plays. DeJounte Murray was making huge plays. Tatum was responding. Jaylen was responding. Aaron Nesmith, of all people, was responding. And Nesmith's been good lately. Like, the last two games, he's looking so much different than he did at the beginning of the year. But being in the Garden for that one was so much fun. It was kind of a throwback to the days when fans were there, because they got loud, man. That was the first time.
I was going to say, so tell me what that's like. Because me and Abby are sitting there, that's the hardest part. That's the first time since, like, fans have been back in the building that we're like, damn, we really want to feel this and be there. Because I think, you know, that makes a difference. And that's why, like, I'm probably romanticizing that IT game right now. Because when you're in the building and it gets loud and it gets crazy. I mean, did people get loud, the 2,300 that were in there?
Yeah, it was actually really loud. It was louder than I thought it could get for a crowd of that size. And at halftime, the boos were even really loud. Like, the boos were very, very loud. But then obviously they start coming back, and it was by far the liveliest that place has felt in more than a year. It was like, for the first time, I felt like home court advantage in the playoffs could actually matter, because fans can get really loud. I didn't know how loud just, you know, fewer than 3,000 fans could get until Tatum was going for 60 and the Celtics were coming back and big play after big play was happening. The coolest part to me was after the game, while you were doing your walk-off interview with Tatum, he was sitting on just a table off to the side of the court, and fans just waited for him. It was like almost everyone waited for him and didn't want to leave the arena until they could sit, like, give him the proper send-off into the locker room. And I thought that was really cool, especially during such a tough season, like a season when really things have gone wrong. And he kind of acknowledged the crowd and kind of touched his hand to his lips and kind of blew a little kiss at the crowd. And it was a cool moment where they just showed their appreciation for what really became like a special, special performance. It was like that. You brought up the Isaiah thing. That it kind of reminded me of that, because that too was like the Miami game, right? Is that the one you're talking about?
Yep, exactly. The huge, like, comeback.
Yeah, it snuck up on you, because that game, it was like, he wasn't having an all-time game. He was obviously having a really good game, and then all of a sudden, it was like he was in the 50s. And this one with Tatum, it was like he was having a really good game, and then all of a sudden, he's fucking tied with Larry Bird, you know, and it's just an all-time performance.
So the craziest part for me is, I didn't even notice it in the moment, but zero turnovers. Like, what, we spent all of last week pretty much crushing Tatum as he was struggling, 19 turnovers in 4 games. and then to go out, he probably had 120 touches in this game, and to not turn the ball over is wild to me. You know, they got the rebounds, 5 assists, whatever it was. And like literally, like you said, bullying his way to the basket and to not turn it over in those instances is remarkable. And you think about it, like he commits 1 or 2 turnovers and they don't win this game and he doesn't get 60. And like it's just remarkable. And it was cool to see. They kept the camera on him after that, after I finished the interview, and I could see him walk out, and I could see like the, you know, it's hard to tell with the plexiglass or whatever, but it did look like there was a ton of fans, and same deal. I was like, damn, this is what I'm missing.
Yeah, it really was like almost no one wanted to leave until they could say goodbye to Tatum and like give him the proper send off. And I thought that was cool. And then like that game, I just thought the turnover stuff, that's important. Like obviously he committed a lot of turnovers the last week or so. He's always been a low turnover guy. Yeah. I didn't think that was like a huge issue for him. It's obviously been a huge issue for their team. But the fact that it was such a clean outing to have 60 and get to the hoop as often as he did and be met by Poeltl as often as he did and still finish and draw fouls and just a ridiculous, ridiculous performance. And then we got to talk about Nesmith because he took Evan Fournier's minutes in the fourth quarter. He took Evan Fournier's minutes in overtime, and it made sense. Like, Nesmith the last couple of games has just been fantastic, and I think a lot of Celtics fans would have wanted him gone at the trade deadline in a trade for Aaron Gordon. A lot of fans probably wrote him off earlier in the season when he was, you know, started slow and didn't do much and looked out of sorts. But he's just been a totally different player lately, and you can see the hustle. And I just think there's something there, you know, like, yeah. Like there's a 3-point shooter there. There's a dogged defender. Like, he is really, I think Brad Stevens said it in his press conference, he's like at one end of the spectrum on the playing hard, you know, like he plays really fucking hard. Even among NBA players, he plays really fucking hard.
I think we need to call him like Crash Nesmith or something, because like every time he goes at the hoop, I think he's going to break his neck. And but that's what you want from that sort of player, right? Like, this is our problem with Romeo Langford, is that Romeo was playing really good defense and has that 7-foot wingspan. But, you know, even though he's been, he was terrible on offense, but he just didn't play with any energy or grit and do all the little things that Nesmith is doing. And I put some of this on Brad. Like, I thought when Nesmith did his little original kind of come up back in mid-January or whatever it was, when he finally started to get some minutes, it was like baffling that he disappeared as quickly as he did, because the Celtics were still injured. They still couldn't, you know, they still needed an extra wing. That was when Tatum went through COVID. And I was like, man, that's kind of baffling. I wonder why Brad's not going back to him. And the whole thing was, what I kept hearing was that, you know, they need ball movers out there and they need guys who can create for others and create for themselves. Well, I mean, Nesmith came back here and is just kicked in the door by saying, I'm just going to play my ass off for whatever amount of minutes I get. He screams after everything he does now. Like, he'll take a shot and he just yells. And I love it. Like, I just want that fire. And so I think he's played himself into a playoff role. I don't think it's a huge playoff role. Like, but he's the ninth guy now. Like, Romeo's sitting there on the bench in a hood and sitting on his hands, and Nesmith now is just like, yeah, like, I'm gonna show you what I can do.
Yeah, he's a competitive maniac, and he's a competitive maniac who can also shoot, or, you know, projects to be a shooter, which is very promising. And he's an athletic 6'6" competitive maniac too. So I think there's a lot to like about Aaron Nesmith. And as far as them needing like a ball mover and stuff like that, I just think they needed energy.
Yeah.
You know, like Tatum, for as good as he is, he's like a laid back player. You know what I mean? And Jaylen Brown, like, sometimes can be a laid back player. Obviously he can be a higher energy guy too, but like, they need guys, and I think that's part of the reason why Robert Williams has made a big impact. He's just high energy all the time. Like, he's running into every screen. He's running after every loose ball and Tristan Thompson tonight, same way. Like, God damn, that motherfucker got every rebound. And so like, I think you need to surround those guys, Tatum and Brown, with like high energy guys. And if you have Marcus Smart and Aaron Nesmith and Tristan Thompson and Robert Williams, like, that's a lot of hustle guys. And Kemba can be a part of that too. But like, I just think Nesmith, like you said, he's separated himself lately from Romeo Langford because he can give you some of the defensive impact. I don't think he's as solid as Romeo, but he can also like make a lot of plays. And then offensively, like, he's just done a lot more. Yeah. He's hit threes. He's gotten to the rim sometimes. He's gotten putbacks, like, constant energy. And I didn't expect that from Nesmith after the way he started the season, but he had like every single reason for starting like shit, you know? Like, I couldn't have scripted a tougher start to the season for him.
I thought it was telling the other night against Charlotte when Brad, like, I don't know if it was on purpose, if it was just based on the clock, but subbed in Nesmith, Pritchard, and Rob coming off the injury at the same time. And you could just feel the game was different when they were out there. And I think that was like sort of Brad's, oh yeah, like, that matters. And, you know, we know Brad prioritizes being in the right spots and not being a liability on defense and all that. But sometimes it's just as simple as, this guy's going to go out there and create chaos and he's going to risk breaking his neck to get an offensive rebound. And sometimes that's just what this team needs, because they're so lackadaisical at times. They just need someone to come and like provide that turbo shot of energy.
Yeah, I think that's really important for them. And I mean, Robert Williams gives that to them a lot. Nesmith gives that to them. And then Nesmith, he's just another 6'6 guy. I talked about this with Romeo, and I think it was important when he came back because they played him. It's like just having another versatile guy. And right now, like, Fournier is just in the middle. The poor guy, man. The poor guy. You can tell he's still dealing with the after effects of COVID, something fierce. And just hasn't gotten into the swing of things. And go ahead.
I was going to say, I feel bad. Like, it's got to be brutal for these guys coming back from COVID. I mean, when Jason Tatum goes through it, you know, it's got to affect everybody. I mean, how confident are you that comes out of it before the playoffs?
Yeah, that's the thing, is like, the playoffs are coming soon.
Like, real soon.
Yeah, and it's important. I mean, you saw Brad kind of make the decision tonight, like, okay, we got to put Fournier on the bench. And it was because Nesmith was playing out of his mind. I think Fournier actually had a pretty good third quarter. But, like, at what point, if he's like that, do they have to say, you know what, we got to go with somebody else, whether it's Nesmith or Langford or Peyton Pritchard? I think in an ideal world, the Celtics will very much limit the minutes beyond like their starters, Fournier and Tristan Thompson, right? Like, in an ideal world, they won't have many minutes for Nesmith. They won't have many minutes for Pritchard, even though Pritchard's been good all season and Nesmith has been good lately. But if Fournier is still like this and like really a shell of himself, then they're going to have to make other decisions. And maybe that means more Nesmith. Maybe it means more Pritchard. Maybe it means, you know, you dust off Romeo Langford or play Shemmy or play Grant. But I just think, like, Fournier is really important. And he hasn't been able to show any of that. And that's been, like a real disappointment, I think, for Boston that he's been so unfortunate since coming to the Celtics. Like, he missed a game because he had a false positive test. And then he actually tested positive. And then he came back and Brad Stevens said he was foggy, which I assume means he had brain fog from COVID-19, which is basically like you're playing through jet lag and feeling disoriented all the time. It's like, damn, you know, like, shit. That's tough. And it took Tatum, like, what did it take, a full month for him to come back? Yeah.
And so, and like, then in the bigger picture of things, and like, the Celtics have far more near-term worries to deal with and just getting their own act together before the playoffs. But, you know, Fournier is going to be an unrestricted free agent. And part of what you're trying to do in this late season time is like, not only get him acclimated, but show him like, hey, you can thrive here and you can be good and we want you here. And I worried a little bit that whether, you know, no fault of the Celtics, no fault of his own because he's battling through this, but he might get done this whole experience and just be like, eh, you know, maybe I do just want to get the most money I can get out there. I don't know how I fit in that offense. And it's too bad. I just don't know if you're going to know for sure if he's part of your core moving forward or how he feels. It just adds like a complete layer of weirdness to an already weird offseason as they sort of figure out what's next.
Yeah. On the other hand, though, like, let's say he does decide to re-sign with Boston, and then you've got Pritchard, who's established himself all season as a solid backup point guard, and then you've got Nesmith, who's shown that he could, you know, has signs of being a player. And then you come back next year and you have all three of those guys off the bench, plus Tristan Thompson, who's been good lately and learned how to kick out the ball after he got offensive rebounds, which is a fantastic development.
Is that like the craziest development of the season?
It's incredible.
What do you think happened?
I mean, they must have sat him down and just said, Tristan, you cannot fucking keep doing this. Like, there are wide open teammates. If you get an offensive rebound, the first thing you have to do is look out to the three-point arc.
I think Brad just sat him down in a session and was like, hey, we're going to watch Rob Williams tape for a second here. Oh, Rob got an offensive rebound. What does he do with it? Oh, he threw it out to an open shooter. Huh, that's interesting. Hey, let's watch another clip. Hey, Rob just got an offensive rebound and kicked it out to an open shooter. That's interesting. You know, and just he kept doing it.
It's so funny because it was like the whole first couple months of the season, he was probably the worst I've ever seen at that. Like, it was as soon as he got it, he was a vacuum. He was going to go up no matter what. And then he just changed. It was really like Brad just snapped on him one day. It was like, motherfucker, this cannot happen. But it was very interesting development. But he's been good. And if you come back next year with Fournier on a reasonable price and the rest of that bench, then you have, you know, Romeo as like an X factor. Does he play okay? You've got Jabari Parker as an X factor. Does he get in good shape and play better defense? And then you can really feel comfortable about your bench, and far more comfortable about your bench than the Celtics have felt this season. And so I think like, if you look at it from that perspective, then there's a lot of promise. And obviously there's a lot unknown with Fournier, and maybe he looks at this and is just like, you know what? This experience wasn't what I expected, but all the factors were out of my control, out of the team's control. And it was just, I felt like shit. I couldn't play well. And still, like, I liked being around the guys. This team has a lot of talent. I just watched Jason Tatum score 60 points. I'm going to have a chance in the playoffs for the first time in my career. Like, there's a lot in Boston to like for Fournier, on top of the fact that they're, you know, they obviously intend to resign him and intend to offer him a pretty sizable contract when he hits free agency. So I do think, like, with the development from Nesmith, that kind of changes things for their bench. And if you have him and Fournier, all of a sudden that's a lot of 6'6", 6'7" dudes that can do a lot of things and switch and be active. And that's how you build a team. And that's why the Celtics sucked earlier this season, because they didn't have enough of those guys, you know?
The one concern is, you know, so you're in a playoff series. Can you keep everybody healthy? And because one injury, it feels like, leaves this team really exposed. And maybe that's negated a little bit now as Nesmith comes on. But, you know, those minutes where you have to lean on Grant. And I mean, if you get bubble Grant, that's great. If you got, like, even tonight, Grant was pretty good hitting those threes early.
Yeah, he actually like kept them within 30.
Right, which is crazy to say, But
what an insane sentence to say, but it's true.
There was a point in the broadcast where I think, you know, Scal was like, it's down to 25. They've got a chance. I'm thinking, what are we saying right now?
So someone texted me, one of my buddies texted me, like, Scal just said they're chipping into the lead. And it's like, it was like 24-point deficit at the time. And he's like, yeah, good call, Scal. And then, of course, they were chipping into the lead.
They were down 20, I think, when I did a little update in the third quarter about the Philly Atlanta game, and I said, like, hey, if they lose this game, and I might have even been more definitive. I was like, when they lose this game, they're going to be dropping down to the seventh seed. And Scal like legitimately called me out, and he's like, hey, are you saying this is already a loss? And like in my mind, like luckily my mic wasn't open because I would have definitely said yes, this is definitely a loss. And of course, yeah, just like you said, they marked this craziest comeback and find a way to win, which, I mean, again, just bananas that they were even in that game to begin with. One thing on the bench, my counter argument to that is, okay, like Romeo needs a little bit of an attitude adjustment or a boost. He seems a little bit discouraged, and who knows what happens behind the scenes, but just watching the body language, I think he's frustrated, maybe just frustrated with injuries. If Fournier doesn't resign, Jabari Parker has disappeared after, you know, getting minutes. Like, they're still a little bit thin. In a perfect world, I like the way the bench is shaping up if they get the most out of all their 6-7 dudes. But there's a lot of, you know, ifs and buts there that haven't worked out quite as well this year. But like I said, we're gonna have the whole offseason to worry about that. It's they've got far more pressing issues in the near term, including figuring out how to get Evan Fournier to remember his shooting abilities.
Were you very disappointed in Brad Stevens' daughter for leaving at halftime?
We're gonna drag Kinsley over this. I can't say I blame her. Like, if you'd given me the option at halftime to leave the studio and go home, I might have taken you up on it. My friends and my kids were at a neighbor's house, and I was texting with the other dad, and I was saying, I'm kind of bummed I'm not there, and I have to watch this stupid game where the Celtics are getting cranked again after giving us false hope after the Charlotte game. So no, I do not blame Kinsley Stevens. She might have like a soccer game tomorrow, and was just like, yeah, I'm over this. I don't want to watch them not defend the paint anymore. I'm going to go home.
Yeah, I don't blame her at all either. I did think it was interesting from Brad to, after, you know, one of the third biggest comeback victory of the last 35 years in the NBA, he was sort of pissed in his press conference, and to the point where he sort of deflected away from how great Jason Tatum was in his game. And I thought that was an interesting decision from Brad, because he's always very calculated in his press conference. Mm-hmm. Whatever he says, he does it because he thinks that's what his team needs to hear. And after the Oklahoma City game, you know, he was like, yeah, we're on to the next one. The game after that, he was like, yeah, we actually played hard in the Oklahoma City game. And then this one, they come all the way back and win, and he's like, man, fuck that first half, in obviously different language because he's Brad Stevens. But I was very interested to hear him say that and to hear the way he went about that, because I think when the Celtics are healthy, it seems like he holds them to a different standard. And Kemba was the only one out today. Everyone else was healthy. And so when they're pretty close to being fully healthy, I feel like he holds them to a standard and wants them to play great and doesn't want them to let go of the rope. And then he's far more forgiving when they're not healthy. But today it just felt like he wanted to send a message to his team, even after they came back, like that's not enough, guys.
Yeah, well, I mean, can you blame them? So, like, that first half was a disgrace. Like, every time we say they can't be worse than they were against Team X, they go out there against Team Y, and it's terrible. And think about it from Brad's perspective. Like, not only does his daughter abandon the arena in embarrassment of her father's team, but, Like, Pop's on the other sideline, and we know. Like, it was so funny to hear Brad when he got asked about Pop today. He's like, well, I don't really know him, you know, that well. And it's like, come on, man. Like, you know how much he idolizes Pop and the Indiana connection and calling him. And, you know he relishes those moments. And remember that game where the Celtics had all the legends there and they were down at halftime and Brad was so mad, like probably as mad as we'd ever seen him. He felt like he was getting embarrassed in front of all these people he wanted to clearly impress. I think this is the same exact situation. Now, it drills down to more simplicity in that Brad Stevens recognizes that if his team plays like anything like it did in the first half in the playoffs, they're going to get annihilated by really good teams. And I know he's frustrated. But yeah, it is interesting that his star forward had this major game. And, you know, he gave him his flowers a little bit, but you could tell he was more frustrated that they were even in position to have to come back from 32 down. And, you know, Perk on our post-game show was like, loving it. He's like, that's the Brad Stevens I need. I need that angry Brad. And I was like, yeah, you know, I think the Celtics would prefer to not put themselves in a position where the coach is pissed that they have to come out of that hole.
Yeah, it was funny because like they showered Tatum with whatever water, Gatorade, whatever in the locker room. They had this whole celebration and still Stevens came out and was like, man, fuck those guys. play hard in the first half. And it just feels like he's more willing to do that after success. Like he wants to drag them down after success. Whereas after failures, he's like, you know what? I need these guys to stay together. I need them not to pull apart. So I'm going to hype them up a little bit. I'm going to downplay this.
Jay,
I don't know.
I don't mean to go full Packard on you here, but like that's growth mindset in a nutshell, right? Like Brad Stevens will never allow his team to be excited Kaizen. That they literally half-assed their way to a victory. You know, in his mind, it's about building habits and playing consistently. And, you know, so his whole thing is you have to put in the effort and the preparation and put yourself in position to win. In this instance, it's more like everyone kind of, even though it was a team effort, they sort of jumped on Jason Tatum's back and pull the win out of their ass. So yeah, this goes against his ethos. So he has to come out and strike down against it. He can't just be complacent that like, golly gee, we found a way to win a game. You know, I'm sure if you got him in a quiet moment, he's like relieved that they found a way to win.
He's probably pumping his fist right now, like fucking crushing beers.
I like, this is the coach's dream where you win a game that you probably shouldn't have, and you can still yell at your team tomorrow in the film session and be like, you know, this is what we need to do better. And I don't think coaches, there's nothing more that coaches love than that combination.
Yeah, I was just kind of interested because it felt like after that game, and especially in this season, like I thought he would seize the positivity, you know what I mean? Mm. And like finally they had something go incredibly right for them. This has been a team that has been kind of grasping for that all season. And Tatum has this special game and they have this incredible comeback. They do it all without Kemba. They do it all in what became like really an epic game. And then he just kind of didn't allow them to celebrate it. And I guess that's what coaches do. But it was just interesting to me. Let's get to the Potable six pack. Ooh. Because that is the favorite part of the podcast, really.
Yeah,
we gotta draft.
Doesn't Packard usually have beer at this point? Like I'm kind of mad I don't have beer with me right now in my vehicle, which would be illegal.
Yeah, it would be totally illegal. So I'm glad you don't. But yeah, let's go. We'll give you the first pick since you're the guest. Any moment. You can pick any theme. You can pick anything from that game.
I feel like taking the 60 point game would be too easy. I want to go deeper. The thing that makes me most like the thing I look back on the most is I think the last two games, but especially this one, is Nesmith's performance. I just think Like, that's incredibly important.
Nesmith with the first pick in Jason Tatum's 60-point game.
It's too easy. It's the low-hanging fruit. I'm going to let you take it. I want to, because, and maybe just because I feel like I was on the Nesmith hype train pretty early, and I was a little flabbergasted by Brad's reluctance to play him, especially in a weird season where they needed to play him, that I'm relieved that he's getting a chance. I don't know what kind of role he's going to play in the postseason. I keep going back to it. Like, I think there's a chance that when Brad has to lean on his on eight guys, that even Nesmith might get squeezed a little bit, and there's just not a lot of minutes when you've got Marcus Fournier, Jason Tatum, and Jaylen Brown all playing minutes. But I think developing rookies and supplementing your core and getting guys like that, and just like you said, playing the way they play, is hugely important to this team moving forward. In a way, I think it's more important than just a guy putting up a big scoring night. So Aaron Nesmith turning into something, to me, is pick number one.
There you go. I'm going with Jason Tatum scoring 60. No, but more than that, I'm going with the moment during your walk-off interview when everyone just waited for him. That was special to me. Like, that is just – it was just totally organic. Everybody just decided, you know what, he's sitting there. And your interview lasted a while. Like, it was several minutes long. I still haven't listened to it. I got to listen to it at some point.
You don't have
but,
to. It wasn't my finest work. There's this weird audio delay, and he was gassed too. So, like, I would ask a question, and then it probably took him, like, 2 seconds to hear it, and then, like, a second to catch his breath. And people were all over my neck like, that was a terrible interview. You had no flow. And I'm like, talk to the technology people.
So I'm going to, because you chose Nesmith, I'm going to go now with two Jason Tatum moments. Ooh. The other one was when Tristan Thompson told Deuce that his daddy is a bad, bad man.
That's so great.
That's perfect. Absolutely perfect. And Tristan, I've noticed at these games, he likes to go over to Deuce and say what's up after a game. Like, just say hi and say what's up. And I've noticed that. But tonight, to tell him that his father is a bad, bad man, just a great moment.
I'm going to go with Deuce in general. Because, like, you think about this past week, you had Chris Paul actively seeking him out for, like, a photo. It wasn't like the family was
it's Deuce season.
It was just like, hey, Deuce. And then Tatum, as he was doing the interview, gave him the game ball. And, you know, I kind of joked about it, but that's a lot of responsibility for a three-year-old to have the game ball from a 60 burger that you just had Larry Bird. And I know my children, I love them very much, but are not, like, the most secure with valuable assets. And I don't know if I'll trust them. Let alone a ball from a 60 burger. So,
but Deuce sleeps with basketballs, though. Did you see that photo?
That is super cute. And there's obviously that photo of Tatum doing the same thing as a kid. If my children were to be photographed doing what I did, it would be sleeping with a Hulk Hogan wrestling buddy. So,
or a golf club these days.
Or these days it would be like me hugging my three wood as I go to sleep. Maybe Tatum does that too, because I mean Tatum's the big golf guy now, but he just doesn't have time to get out there in this season. But yeah, I'm gonna give credit to Deuce. I was hoping Tatum would bring Deuce into the interview, because that's immediate gold. Like, I'm just giving you a peek behind the curtain in my selfish manner. I was like, please bring Deuce in here, because then everyone will love it and it's a sweet moment. But he did.
Yeah, that's instant viral video.
Exactly, and so he didn't do it, but he said something sweet about. Which I think he repeated in the Zoom call, where he said, you know, after he scored 53, he said he really wished that Deuce had been there and Deuce had given him a phone call or whatever after the game, which is also hilarious. Like, the idea that Deuce was like, I'm going to call my dad and be like, hey, bro, good game tonight. And he's a three-year-old. So neat that Tatum was able to go out there and at 23 years old, put up 60 points and in.
I feel like he's taken a lot of heat this year, Tatum. And
yeah. And I don't like, mean Deuce.
No, Jason. And just because, like, now you look up and he's averaging 26.4 points per game. If you eliminate the February month when he was coming back from COVID and open about how much it impacted him. He's been very efficient.
Is he all NBA?
I think so. I think he's been borderline, and then a performance like this kind of grabs everyone's attention and maybe solidifies him or pushes him into that spot.
That's a big deal.
Yeah, that is a big deal because his contract depends on it too.
Right.
So
like, and it's not a small amount of money. Like, I don't think the Celtics are actively rooting against him not getting all NBA, but it does make the financials a little bit more digestible. But I think just like you said, the fact that he's putting up some of these big performances at the finish line of the season could go a long way towards solidifying that spot.
He's had 2 50-point games in the last month.
No Celtics have ever done that in a season.
That's crazy. And I know points are easier to come by this year, but still, like, it's
like Larry
it's
Bird
insane.
Never had 2 50-point games in a season. He did it a bunch of times, like in 86 and 85, but it was never the same season. That blows my mind that Jason Tatum, at 23 years old, has now done it twice.
Yeah, that's a lot of, like, 60 points, a lot of points. That's a lot of points, man. Speaking of a lot of points, I didn't even realize this until like an hour after the game because it was such a wild game. Celtics scored 80 points in the second half.
Man, wow.
And I think it was like, including overtime, like 91 after halftime.
Yeah. So, and I think it was, I forget, you know, Abby had the stat at some point, but highest scoring half in like a long time. You know, that's a ton of points.
That's insane. Like 80, and it just felt like the comeback happened not all at once, but it was like they never really let up from the early in the second half to the end of overtime. Like the Spurs made some plays, but the Celtics, like, they never relented. It was just wave after wave of important play for them that entire time. And Brad said, even though Brad was as negative as he's been in a while, coaching, but he had a line that was like, yeah, maybe we showed a glimpse of what we can be. And it felt like that. It felt like that was them sort of operating at where they want to be and where they could be. You got one more pick, by the way.
Oh, I'm going to go Tacos Trench Coat.
Oh, that's a great fucking pick.
We were trying to guess. If you just put the trench coat on a scale, how much would it weigh? Because it is a ton of fabric.
I feel like that's one of the trench coats where, like, you got like three people inside standing on top of each other's shoulders.
I made that same joke. I said, if it's one of those, like, bits where you put three people on each other's shoulders and then cover them up with the trench coat. And shout to whoever made it for him. He looked dapper. Shout to Taco.
He looked great.
Shouts to Taco for just, you know, up in the sideline apparel. A lot, you know, we had Rob Williams rocking a Whitney Houston t-shirt the other night on the bench. So the NBA's relaxed fashion policy has made it easy for guys to downshift. Nice of Taco to kick it up and
Taco had a hoodie on the other night.
That's the thing.
And then he just brought it up to the next level and came with the, he was looking good. He was sharp.
It was a sharp look.
I'm going to go last pick. This is an important pick. I want to go with Marcus Smart because he made a lot of great passes and a lot of great decisions throughout the entire second half, but I'm going to go with Jaylen Brown instead because he was 4 for 23, got the ball swung to him in the corner. Jakob Poeltl, rather, was closing hard, and Jaylen hit a three, go-ahead three in Poeltl's face. That was like a clutch shot, a shot, you know, deep in overtime. He played a whole lot of minutes. It had been one of the worst shooting performances he's had in a long time. Drilled it. And That was really, really important shot for the Celtics. It felt like this win was important to them. If, you know, who knows where they go from here, but if they had lost that game, then a lot would have been put on their start. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Obviously Brad harped on it after the game anyway, but a lot from the media would have been placed on the start. How shitty they were, shitty they were after getting clapped by Charlotte and beaten by the Thunder and all that. So manufacturing a win and getting a second win in a row and you know, putting themselves in a tie for fifth place with Atlanta, which is huge in the standings. It was just a really huge win, a really huge shot by Jalen, and a really, really incredible performance by Jason Tatum. Just really just out of nowhere. I love that about basketball too. Like, you can just get out of nowhere an incredible moment. I think it was it Bill Reynolds, the dude from the Providence Journal, who he wrote, what was he? I forget which book it was in, but he wrote in one of his books, like, he would just go hunting for games, you know, like he would go watch high school games and watch college games. And he never knew when he was going to find like an unforgettable moment, an unforgettable game. And that was tonight. Like,
if someone had said at halftime, this is going to be an unforgettable game, would you would have been like, what? Like, in what regard? You know?
Yeah, I went over and one of my buddies was at the game and he was right behind the media section. So I went over shortly after halftime and just chatted with him for a while. And he was talking about how disappointed he was in the Celtics. And I was like, yeah, they've been so shitty. It's been atrocious. Like, you wonder what's wrong with the team.
And that's every conversation I have with my friends now. They're like, what the hell is up with the team? Because, like, everyone just, like, doesn't get it. And I say the same thing. Like, I wish there was a simple answer. But, yeah, if you wanted to sum up the 2021 season in a game, this pretty much encapsulates it. Like, some really bad, some really good, a little bit more good than bad. But, yeah, it's wild what the way it's played out.
Yeah, and so it was just unforgettable night out of fucking nowhere.
I have two questions for you.
Okay.
My hosting duties feels like it's coming on here. One, where did they end up in the standings? Like, despite stumbling ass backwards throughout this season, I feel like they're going to get four or five. The Knicks are going west. I think that's going to be a brutal trip for them. Atlanta just got smacked twice by Philly. And even though they got Trae Young back, I think they've got a little bit more of a daunting schedule. But I feel like last game of the year, Celtics-Knicks could be for like the right to play the Hawks in the 4-5 matchup. Is that crazy?
Yeah, I think the Celtics will end up in the 4-5 matchup somehow. I think they'll finally get sort of healthy. Like, as weird as that sounds, and maybe they won't, but I just feel like they're in a place where, you know, Kemba should come back soon, and nobody else at the moment has an injury. What, like a third of their team has already gotten COVID this season, at least. They shouldn't get COVID again. So I just feel like they'll get healthy and their schedule is easy. And I think they'll put together some wins, get in the 4-5 matchup, and then have a chance to win in the first round. And I think their perfect scenario is like they win, they get in the 4-5 matchup, Philly gets number one, and they get to avoid Brooklyn until a possible Eastern Conference Finals matchup, right?
Yeah, and so that was my next question, was like, so what happens in the playoffs? And Kat, does these last two games make you feel any better? And like, I don't think it changes much for me. I think it ultimately comes down to health and, you know, whether they had that top eight, and you hope they have a little bit, like, you hope they finish strong and feel good about themselves going in, because that gives them the best chance of coming somewhere close to their potential. But yeah, I can't say that two wins make me feel any different, because I know the game before that was an absolute abomination. So I do think there's just going to be this variance where some nights they might have it, some nights they might not, and they're just hoping to sort of catch some momentum at some point and be like, wow, if Kemba can actually be out there for an entire 7-game series, and if we can have no one in COVID protocol, like, you know, maybe we look a little bit better. But yeah, I don't know. I'd like nothing. I don't know if they could. I don't know how many games in a row they'd have to win for me to really be bullish. But you know, the potential's there. I just don't know if they're going to do it consistently enough.
Yeah, I don't think anything they can do from here would really change my perspective on them in the playoffs. And I say that just because, like, I already have a high respect for their ceiling, right? Like,
yeah,
if things go right for them, and if they are healthy and playing together in the playoffs, then they're dangerous, because they have two guys in Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown who are matchup problems for anyone. They have Kemba Walker, who, even though he's been, you know, a little diminished at times this year, still demands a lot of attention from a defense. They have Robert Williams, who's better than I think Daniel Tice was last year, even though they're very different in how they play.
What is it now? 8-1 with Time Lord in April?
Yeah.
That's
an impressive stat. And then Tristan Thompson has played really good ball for them as their other. So they should feel way better about their center rotation than they did last postseason. Fournier is a huge, huge if at this point for the rest of the season and the playoffs. But I just think, you know, if they're healthy and if they're right, then they're going to be a tough matchup. And they have a lot of playoff experience. They have more playoff experience than together, at least, than anyone else probably in the Eastern Conference.
Which is wild to say, right? Like, for a team that is as relatively young as they are oozing for the fact that Kemba doesn't have a ton of playoff experience.
Maybe Miami has more together.
Yeah.
Because they made the finals.
Right. And Jimmy, like, he's got all that pass. But, like, even then, their younger guys haven't had much, and Bam hasn't. Like, so, yeah, you know, you might be right. They might just have – I mean, if you added up everything that Kyrie and Durant has been through, they've certainly got the edge. But Celtics are a grizzled team compared to the Knicks and Atlanta and Charlottes of the world.
Yeah, and I just think a lot of their problems go away when you get to a playoff rotation. Like, you don't have to – start Tremont Waters sometimes, or
shout, you know, out Tremont. Play. Tremont probably should have gotten into the six pack just for also steadying them at some points.
That is true. Yeah, it's Tremont, and I didn't mean to just throw him under the bus, though I did.
But you did.
Like stuff like that. Game. You don't have to worry about that. You know, like, okay, you just have a rotation of all vets, and maybe Pritchard and maybe Neesmith, and who have been there before and who can handle a lot of burden. And, you know, if Tatum and Brown and Kemba are playing at a high level, then they'll be tough. So none of this changes what I think. They've had a lot of flaws. They've had a lot of holes. I am not convinced they can reach their peak, but if they do, they're going to be tough. They're going to be tough. And obviously, you know, they just scored 80 fucking points in the second half, and Jason Tatum had 60. So
yeah,
they can be good when they are good.
What a weird season. Just what a weird game. What a weird season. I'm in the same boat as you. I'm just sort of like, you know, every time someone goes, what do you think is going to happen in the playoffs? I'm like, I don't know. I'm going to be watching. Like, I have to. It's my job. But, like, I am intrigued. I can't wait to see what happens. I think it's going to be a lot, you know, relatively fun. You know, I think they might go 7 games with whoever they match up with in a 4-5 matchup. But, you know, I'm also very intrigued to see what happens when the lights are on and they go up against someone like a Philly. And so I can't wait. I think it's going to be fun.
It's absolutely going to be fun, just like this podcast episode was. Thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate it very much. I threw you the text, like, just kind of desperate. I needed someone.
it works out well. Like, especially after games like this, I want to scream and yell for longer than we have available. So, I like it. And plus, like I said, I'm just driving home. I forgot to get off of my exit, so I'm in New York now. But that's okay. I'll figure it out. Like, we've got an off day before I need to be back.
Hey, good luck getting home from New York, man. I appreciate you coming on quite a bit. We will talk to you all guys later. You all guys, yeah, there you go. way to speak, asshole. That's why Packard normally hosts.
It's 1:40 in the morning. Like, I mean, what can you do? Like, just go tell everyone to like, subscribe, and you know.
Yeah, follow us on Spotify or iTunes, whatever the fuck else you listen to podcasts. Get it done. Anything is possible, baby. Take care, guys.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.